Hi, and welcome to Nexium on Trial. I'm Casey Seiler, managing editor of the Albany Times-Union. This is the seventh episode of this podcast, and we're going to be talking about the sixth and final week of testimony in the trial of Keith Raniere, the co-founder of the shadowy organization known as Nexium, where he was known as Vanguard. There's a lot to talk about, and only one person I want to talk about it with, and that is our outstanding justice reporter, Robert Gavin, who is about to get on the train to come back to Albany after 5 very long days of covering this trial. Rob, how are you holding up?
I'm doing great. I'm happy to talk about the trial. It's kind of hard to believe we're already in week. So it's the seventh podcast, and, you know, we're going to be going into our seventh, you know, week. We've had 6 weeks of testimony. We have heard from a lot of witnesses, probably upward of 20 witnesses. I don't know the exact number, but we've heard from at least 4 former DOS slaves who who were members of this master slave organization within Nexium. And we have heard some very compelling testimony, particularly in the last week, from some of the women who had belonged to this organization. And we've also saw the final witness today, who was an FBI agent whose testimony began on Thursday. And what I find really fascinating, Casey, is that the most, you know, interesting witnesses in this case have been, you know, the people who belong to Nexium or were members of DOS. And this witness, up until maybe 15 minutes left in his testimony, frankly, was not all that compelling in comparison. And party was like, wow, this is the case agent, and that's nothing against him, but he wasn't, you know, part of this. And then in the last 5 or so minutes, Assistant U.S. Attorney Moira Penza played a few tapes that he walked jurors through. And these were videotapes of both Nancy Salzman, the Nexium president, known as Prefect, and she says a number of alarming comments back at a meeting in Apropos, and that's, of course, the former restaurant that was run by Nexium back in 2000, in Half Moon. And she says a number of comments that are part of the Nexium curriculum, including stuff about age of consent and how, you know, what's considered it's abuse in one part of the world is not considered abuse in another. And the age of consent is as young as 12 in places. And we have heard this before, but what we hadn't heard before is they then play Keith Raniere saying the same thing on basically a Skype to a number of supporters, including Allison Mack, and very vehemently explaining how the standards were very different years ago, say in Rome.
And abuse is inconsistent, depending on where you are, what culture you are, things like that. And that doesn't mean that the person is somehow ultimately abusive. They're abusive by some standard, and you have to understand not only what that standard is, but the morality behind that standard. How does this relate to human conduct in the world? You know, the thing, for example, with sexual abuse. In some states, it's their ages. There's the age of consent. Some states it's 17. Some parts of the world it's 12. Some parts of the world it's right. So what's abuse in one area is not abuse in another. But what is it really? Abuse is, is the person a child or is the person adult-like? Does the person have a certain type of understanding of cognition, morality, to make such a choice? Because that choice has effects potentially on them physically, but also on effects in society later. Mm-hmm. Often when you counsel people who were, say, children of what you call abuse, you know, the little child, some little children are perfectly happy with it until they find out what happened in later in life. And then it's more society that abuses them than actually the parent, because in other societies in the past, like in Rome or whatever, the standards were completely different. But we're not in Rome, and we should know that. So it is an understanding, a wise understanding of the society and the morality in which we live that's part of it. Part of it's cultural, you know. Someone outing another person for being gay in certain societies leads to death. Right. And you might say that it's an abuse of friendship. If someone has a trust that, all right, they let their friend know that they're gay, and then that friend outs them for money or for glory or for revenge or for whatever it is, that's an abuse of their power because they have the power literally to cause that person to be killed.
Right.
And they decided to kill them in exchange for glory, in exchange for money, in exchange for whatever it is.
That's a fairly bent portrait of moral cultural relativism there from Keith Raniere. How did that play in the courtroom when it was played, Rob?
I think it's fair to say there was astonishment among reporters, and I can only imagine what the jury was thinking. I know I heard at least one person behind me in the courtroom gallery basically do a holy four-letter word beginning with the word S.
Yeah.
And a number of people were just like, OMG, you know, this was stunning. In a case where, you know, me and a number of other reporters who've been covering this the last 2 months, we always say almost on a daily basis, we don't think it can get any stranger, and it always does. And this today is just one of those moments where to leave the last bit of evidence in a case that includes allegations of sex trafficking and racketeering with underlying acts of sexual exploitation of a child and child pornography possession, to have a tape where he's justifying child sex abuse and saying, you know, the age of consent in some places is 12, and then comparing it to, you know, ancient Rome, it was this, we're not in ancient Rome now. And, you know, Nancy Salzman's tape says many of the same things, that it's society, maybe society are the ones who are doing this. And, you know, considering he did not testify in this case, and that was part of it, I mean, no one thought he would, but there's always that part where you wondered, because you never know. I mean, he's a mysterious guy, and was Keith Raniere going to take the stand? Would he stay up there put himself in a situation where he'd have to be cross-examined, and ultimately he decided not to. But this was, I thought, potentially anyway, a devastating last bit of evidence to leave a jury with.
There's an element of kind of the mic drop to it, you know, that prosecutors, if they wanted to close with a fairly definitive piece of evidence, this was definitely it. So just to let people know the particulars, the last testimony was heard on Friday. We're talking Friday afternoon, just after 6 p.m. The defense is not going to, or made the decision not to bring any witnesses, correct? There will be no defense offered beyond the cross-examination that we've heard so far.
Correct. And when you think about that, keep in mind that in his opening statement, defense attorney Mark Agnifilo told the jury that more than 17,000 people had come through the doors of NXIVM programs. So keep that in mind, that if that's true, and, you know, there's no reason not to believe it's true, not a single person would get on the witness stand and say a word about Keith Raniere. So in his defense, a number of people who went through those doors have said some negative things about him. You know, there's a lot of things out there, and there's literally nothing to really say that's not true, other than whatever Mark Agnifilo will say in his closing on Tuesday.
On tomorrow, that is Saturday, the judge and the prosecution and defense counsel will meet and have a conference about what the charge to the jury is going to be. Then there'll be closing arguments on Monday, then the charge to the jury on Tuesday, correct? And then deliberations will begin. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the impression I got, and it certainly started a little sooner, the impression I have is we'll have the charge conference tomorrow in the courthouse. And then Monday, we will, about 9 o'clock, expect an extremely packed house for closing arguments, which my understanding is Moira Penza will deliver the closing argument for the prosecution, which should probably take about 4 hours or so. Now, on an interesting note, everything Moira has said throughout the trial has gone longer than what she estimates. So it could go longer. It's become kind of a running joke between the lawyers and the judge. And then from what I understand, I believe Mark Agnifilo said his closing will also be about 4 or so hours. And then there's a rebuttal. You don't see this in state court, such as Albany County Court, or for example, you know, courts in the capital region. You don't see in a county court, a state court, you know, the prosecution go first, the defense will go first, and the prosecution will go first, and that's it. But in federal court, in this case, there's a rebuttal after the defense. And that is supposed to be, I think, less than an hour. And that, I think, will be – my understanding is I believe that will be Mark Lesko, but I'm not entirely sure that that will be him. But I think the expectation is that will probably go into Tuesday. That's the understanding, is I think that will go into Tuesday. I think we will then have the actual jury instructions. And depending on how long that takes – I think there's about 140 pages of instructions. So there's a lot there. I don't think we're going to get to the heavy deliberations. I personally don't think you can expect to see deliberations begin until on Wednesday. And then here's an interesting nugget to keep in mind, too. In the event that they do not have a verdict by the end of the day, Friday, right, there's three jurors who have vacation plans the next week, starting on the Monday. So they're going to have – they don't have a verdict by the end of the day on Friday. Those jurors are off, and they're going to have to replace them with alternates, and then they have to start the deliberations all over again. That's a long way off, and I'm not saying that that would happen, and they could even deliberate on Saturday next week potentially. But that's just a potential thing to keep in mind.
We were discussing, I think it was a day or two ago, that it had been theorized, I don't know by whom, but you heard it in the courtroom, that there was a possibility that Keith Raniere, who apparently, and it's not really a big surprise, is a big fan of the novels of Ayn Rand, might decide to pull a Howard Roark, who's the main character in The Fountainhead. And if you've ever read the book, poor you, but if you've ever seen the movie, which is very entertaining, it ends with Howard Roark, this sort of world-beating individualist architect, giving his own final argument in his trial for demolishing a building that was built from one of his plans. It's a very long story. I don't recommend the book, but the Gary Cooper movie is really good. The idea that Raniere, who is this kind of verbal, you know, he is definitely verbally talented in the way that he was able to spellbind so many of the members of NXIVM, that he might get up and give a kind of an attempt at a world-beating monologue where he would justify everything he's done. But is that kind of too much or too little to hope for, do you think?
I would think that if that were to happen, you would see several members of the press, potentially myself, jumping for joy at what we're going to see from a spectacle perspective. But, yeah, Frank Perlotta, who's, you know, one of the people who had been involved with NXIVM and is no longer doing that. I believe he had opined about that possibility on his website because of Raniere's love for that book, that he may actually do that. I don't believe you'll see that, but
He wouldn't be able to introduce any evidence, any facts, or he wouldn't be able to enter any facts that had not yet been put into evidence during testimony. So
correct. I mean, lawyers try to do it all the time, but I don't think he wouldn't be able to do that. And it could really turn this into a circus. But I think at the end of the day, I mean, Claire Brompton spent documented about $14 million on the defense for all the defendants in this case. And I think you'll see at some point, you know, a lot of money. I don't think they were paying that money to have Keith Raniere get up there and speak. But
right.
If you believe everything you've heard of this trial, Keith makes the decisions, not them. So I guess there's a tiny possibility of that, but I don't think you're going to see that. I think it's going to be Mark Agnifilo. You know, I mean, it's a strange case, right? And I'm tempted to say stranger things have happened, but I don't think they have. So I'm not going to say that. But I don't think we're going to see that. But, you know, I guess one can dream, right, that we will see, you know, see if life imitates art, so to speak.
Listen, Rob, I know you have to catch a train, so I really appreciate your taking the time. And thanks again for all the good work. This week especially has been a marathon, and you're just doing great work. You have been listening to Nexium on Trial, a production of the Albany Times Union. I'm managing editor Casey Seiler. I would like to thank, of course, Rob Gavin, as well as the Times Union's podcast whisperer, David Lombardo. Please be sure to check out his CapCon podcast on state politics. I'd also like to thank Jeff Anderson and Associates, which has been supporting the Times Union's coverage of the Nexium trial. And please check in next week for what potentially could be a verdict in the trial of Keith Raniere. Thanks for listening. Hey, Rob, that was great. Thanks.
Oh, thanks. Happy to do it. Hopefully people didn't hear like the faucet next door.
No, I think it's fine.
Cool. All right. Thanks a lot,
right.
Casey.
Thank you.